velvety soft bath hands and some real thud in the back, leading to moments like this. And McConaughey, and he's snaking his way through. And in Clark de Glanville, fucking a singer is standing, waiting, pouncing. Big Joe makes his a double. Oh, he's gone through on his own. Josh Matabesi, ender of worlds, destroyer of walls. Spencer whips it away. Beautifully done. Gathered, scored. The two young bucks who underline their love of this place earlier in the week. Orlando Bailey and Max Ajomo conspire in thrilling fashion.
Hello and welcome to the Bath Rugby Plug, the rugby podcast by the fans, for the fans. Plugging the boys in blue, black and white. The valiant boys in blue, black and white that came up just short on Saturday at Exeter. My name is Gabriel and I'm joined as ever by my good friend and fellow Bath fan, Tom. Tom, how are you, mate?
I'm very, very good, mate. Very good. How are you getting on? Recovered from your trip down to the delightful Sandy Park?
Yeah, I mean, off the field, right? Cracking day. A brilliant weekend of rugby. Almost too many games. Like eight is almost too many. I did think I managed to watch every single one. But it was a lot of rugby. Cracking weekend down there. We decided to stay the night, given the train situation. Managed to fill the car up, which was an added boost.
Nice boutique hotel, was it, in central Exeter?
Not exactly, no. But it was a really good weekend off the field. On the field, as we'll come on to, I thought 40 minutes of maybe the best rugby I've ever seen Bath play live, and then 40 minutes where they lost their way. And we'll come on to talk a lot about that later. But yeah, Wednesday morning as we record, I've kind of just about gotten over the disappointment of the result. Tom, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. You said you watched a lot of rugby at the weekend, eight games, you managed to catch all of them. I probably watched 25, 30 games. I mean, I can't tell you I remembered anywhere near that number, and obviously only 14 minutes each in length. But yeah, I was, I'm still out East, as you know, and I was at the Hong Kong Sevens, which equally was an incredible, incredible weekend of action. Yeah, I've not really been into Sevens and followed Sevens, but I think I certainly will more now because it's really exciting. Some of the skills on display were outrageous, to be honest. New Zealand winning both competitions, men's and women's, and just looked absolutely phenomenal at times. And yeah, just a cracking atmosphere at Hong Kong Stadium. So yeah, slightly more humid conditions by the looks of you boys who were wrapped up very warm. And I believe, G, that you know you're a bit of a local celebrity in the Exeter parts as well.
Yeah, plenty of Bath fans about. We were down with a decent group of Bath fans and stood in the north stand facing into the wind. And yeah, we found the two other listeners, apart from the guys we were with, in the podcast. So yeah, very weirdly, rarely happens, was recognised just from my voice, which I think is the kind of weirdest part. So yeah, shout out to the lads who were dressed up, one with a horse on his head to signify Will Muir, and one with an Alfie Barbary wig, which at one point in the first half, he decided to take off and almost threw onto the pitch. But yeah, I mean, lovely to meet those fellas. I can't remember their names, which is a little bit embarrassing, but Alfie and Will, we'll call them. It was great to meet you and watch the game with you and lots of other Bath fans in and around us. Yeah, it was a really good atmosphere at Sandy Park. And they were kind of wondering, Tom, why you were, you know, venturing out North Korea, South Korea. I think they think you're some sort of intrepid journalist or war reporter. It's not the case. But yeah, we can kind of leave that to the imagination as to what Tom might be doing out there.
We'll leave it shrouded in mystery. Some work, some play, a mixture of both. I don't know which some of the time, but I'll be back in a few weeks' time to round off the end of the season. And I must admit, as much fun as I had at Sevens, I was jealous of you boys heading down to Sandy Park and, you know, enjoying what is probably one of the best weekends of rugby of the whole calendar with all the games that were on. Just before you maybe come on to the game, I did tell you that I'd come prepared with a blue, black and white twist on some of the rugby that I saw, obviously with Horse and Big Mac having come across. As you predicted, this probably wasn't the focus of what I was doing this weekend, but a couple of little updates maybe for you, G. Will Homer turned out for GB, obviously ex-Bath scrum half and brother of Tom Homer. He put in a very valiant performance, actually. I was really impressed with him. GB struggled massively and have been doing all season. They finished 11th. I think the only game they won was the 11th-12th playoff. So out of 12 teams, not the best performance. The other guy who I noticed and who appeared on the wing in the 10s competition, a guy that was formerly in the Premiership only a few seasons ago, but has severely let the rig go and is enjoying his retirement, shall we say, is Nemani Nadolo, who, when he played G, he was a big, big slice. He is now, and playing in white kit didn't help, he is now one of the biggest men I've ever seen. He can barely run, to be fair. But when he gets the ball, it takes three or four to drag him down. So yeah, not suggesting that we bring him on either. One guy though that I had written down somewhere that I think a name for anyone interested in sevens and maybe Bath scouts who I'm sure are listening could have a look at. Guy called Hugo Lennox, who is the Irish kind of 9-10. He looked a proper player, 25 years of age, very small guy. So would have to put on a bit of timber. But that would be my shout from the sevens. He looks a real skillful player. So maybe we'll see him on the roster in a couple of seasons.
From one skillful player there, Tom, to another skillful player, Tom Dunn, of course, Bart Tucker, and the man behind this podcast, Black and White Butchers, supporting the Bath Rugby Plug podcast. Check out their Instagram for our next home game against Saracens. Check out their stand next to the Swift Half, Black and White Butchers, as always, supporting the Bath Rugby Plug. Let's get into the Bath game at the weekend then, Tom. Obviously a 21-15 defeat. And let's kind of take a wholesale view of this one. I think ultimately very, very disappointing and potentially a fatal loss when you look at both what it meant for our Champions Cup run, which is now over, clearly, and the injuries that we sustained and what the impact of those could have on our Premiership run.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of the classic case of salt in the wound. You lose a big game, but more importantly, it could affect the rest of your season. And, you know, you always see kind of the clickbaity sort of headlines about, in particular, the Finn Russell injury, but also potential injuries to Hill and to Redpath, very important players for us, as it really derailing our season and spoiling our season. But I genuinely think in this instance, it could do. We obviously don't know the severity yet of any of those injuries, but I think particularly with Finn Russell, although Landy, when he came on, I thought did a decent job during the time, particularly when he was at 10. Mm. In that second half, it really started to... We couldn't get by on heart alone, and I think it was that loss of control and also the impacts that it meant with other players playing out of position that is so important. And Finn Russell, as we've seen, his one of his best attributes isn't his own individual skill. It's how he brings out skills of players around him. And if, say, this is a season-ending injury for him, suddenly our chances of top four and particularly of winning the whole thing, I think, are you know, not down the drain, but it's a hell of a lot harder.
Massively. We, as you said, Wednesday morning as we record, we don't know the extent of the injuries. Russell, groin injury, Redpath, ankle it looked like, and Ted Hill it looked like a rib injury. You know, I think you're right. Russell's the one that everyone will be kind of waiting with bated breath, because he's the one that was ultimately going to take us over the top this season and get us into the top four and potentially win the Premiership, which we are, let's not forget, still third favourites with the bookies to do. So fingers crossed it isn't as serious as it looked. It was so worrying, though, because the tackle was made on him in the ruck and immediately he went down and immediately he said, I can't play on. And for it to be that serious, I think, is concerning. So Johan said after the game that he wasn't going to rush Finn Russell back. I think the chances of him being fit for Exeter, which is our next game in now, you know, 2 weeks' time, I think are unlikely. But if we can get him back at some point, then that will be huge for our chances. And then, yeah, when you look at the game as a whole, losing Russell wasn't the end of the world. As you know, it was very early on and we stuck in it so well. But I think losing Redpath as well and the 6-2 split, which cost us dearly, meant that there was such a big reshuffle and we ended up with Schroeder at 9, Spencer at 10, Bailey at 12. And I think when the importance of territory in that game was so key, the win was a vital factor, as we'll talk about. Having that shuffle in the key area around your decision makers and your kickers ultimately really, really cost us. I was just wondering, Tom, do you think that they made the right decision there when Schroeder came on? Were you happy with him going to 9 and bumping Spencer out, or would you have maybe reshuffled it in another way?
I think probably with the benefit of hindsight, I mean, we've seen Ben Spencer can basically play anywhere, but he's so important to us at 9. I think there would have been an argument to play him at 9, keep Bailey at 10, where he is particularly defensively going to be much more comfortable than at 12, and then maybe shift Louis Schroeder. I guess you would shift him out to the wing, perhaps, and bring maybe Will Muir into the centre or Gallagher into the centre and Will Muir at fullback, something like that, so that you at least keep some kind of position, sort of integrity in your positions at 9 and 10. Because like you say, with the wind and against a team like Exeter, controlling that territorial game is going to be so important. And that was something that we really struggled to do. Mm-hmm. I just think on 6-2, obviously you said it cost us dearly. There's been points of this season where it's been really important for us. We've spoken about the intensity that we've had coming on from the bench, and how we've grown into games with our physicality. I think, obviously, with hindsight, and when you lose, when you have key injuries like that, you're in a really tough spot. But I don't blame Van Gran for continuing with a 6-2 split, because I do think it's worked for us.
I don't like 6-2. I think we spoke about this a little bit last season. I think we brought it up when we had the interview with JP Ferreira. I just think it leaves you so exposed. I know South Africa won the World Cup 7-1 at points, which was remarkable stuff.
But four scrum halves.
I just think that it leaves you so exposed. And 10 minutes of Yaku Kutsir at the end of this game, I just think five, you've got enough cover there. But maybe this is just a hindsight. But I remember thinking this last year. I haven't mentioned it this year, so you know, you've probably got a point. But I just think it's so costly on this occasion. If we had Ajoma on the bench, for example, it's a, you know, and he just slots in at 12, do we win this game? We've got a much, much better chance. I think you're right. Personally, I'd have kept Spencer at 9 and I would have put Schroeder on the wing, probably brought Big Joe in to play 13. Or Will Muir. But what I thought was really interesting was that at the end of the game, so in the last kind of 5 minutes when we were chasing that converted try, which would have won us the game, Spencer then moved back to 9. And I just think whether that was a case of Johan maybe identifying that he'd made an error, or whether it was just Spencer on the field making that decision on his own, I'm not sure. But I think he needed to be as involved as possible in winning that game for us. Without Russell, without Redpath, he became the key, and moving him to 10, a position that he never plays, right? That's not his position. Moving him out of position, I think, massively decreased his value in that second half. And I thought it was a costly error. You know, Johan's been amazing. I'm not kind of trying to put all this defeat on at his door, but I think there probably was a tactical error made there. And I think having Spencer at nine or having him on the bench would have made quite a big difference.
Well, just one final point. You know, this is really unfortunate, right? Like, how often do you lose your nine and captain and one of your talismanic players to an HIA? You lose your 10 and, you know, chief manipulator, chief attacking captain, chief kind of like controller of the pace of the game on 16 minutes or whatever it is. And then you lose your 12, you know, a guy that's having a cracking season. And ultimately, you really don't have much in the way of European experience to bring on in Schroeder and Bailey. It's really, really unfortunate. We should say that as well. And if those injuries don't happen, you really back us to win this game, particularly going into the Sheds ahead, having played into the wind. And maybe when you know, nice way to bring it onto the game, G, it was obvious on TV to an extent, but probably more so in person, I would say. That wind seems pretty aggressive and a real significant factor in how the game played out.
It was a significant factor, and I think it was a massive factor, right? But I think it was a massive factor, not just because of the advantage it gave the team going with the wind. And we were fortunate enough to be sat in the stand kind of facing the wind, so saw a lot of the action, particularly in that first half. But I think it was also important because of almost what it did to Bath's mindset and to Exeter's mindset. I think that Bath really, really kind of thought that first half, once they went into the Sheds, I thought they thought, right, that's a lot of this job done. The kind of wind will take care of things in the second half. And I think Exeter, to their credit, they adapted so much better and in the second half played really, really well. And I think we've said a lot of things about why Bath kind of messed up a little bit and the tactical errors they may have made and the little things they did. I think credit to Exeter, they've got a lot more experience playing there. I was speaking to a season ticket holder of Exeter Chiefs before the game, and he said that he reckons it was a 14-point wind. And I think that was sort of the mindset that Bath had. They thought that, you know, let's defend and let's just get through this first half and then it will almost take care of itself in the second half. And that just wasn't the case. And Exeter tactically played much, much better. And I think credit to them that they got it right. Go on.
Well, I was going to say, do you want to take on to the game?
Yeah, so the kind of first half was a pretty familiar pattern with Exeter banging the door down. Dunn getting a yellow card on 4 minutes. Lawrence almost also picking up a yellow card in that same kind of sequence of events. They were battering. So much territory. I think the final territory stat was 73%, even higher in the first half, right? And I think Bath were so, so good in defence. I thought two lads really, really stood out in that first half. I thought Thomas de Toit was phenomenal. I don't know his exact individual turnover stats, but I can remember three of them in particular. And his defence on the line was fantastic. And then the other one that really stood out and probably had his best 40 in a Bath shirt, I thought, was Charlie Ewells. There was one instance in that first half where he made a great tackle to hold one of the extra players up over the line. And he was everywhere in that first half. So, yeah, down to 14 men, excuse me, at one point after the Dunn yellow card, and also losing Spencer for 10 minutes in that second half, in that first half, which you referenced. I thought they really, really valiantly defended. They didn't concede during that first half. During that yellow card period. And the only try they did concede in the first half was off the back of an Alfie Barbary mistake. So yeah, that first half defensively from Bath was really, really impressive. We also managed to score two tries of our own in really clinical fashion. The first time we went into the 22, de Toit won a penalty, kicked into the corner, and we rumbled over, and de Toit was the man to finish it off with a try. And then Ted Hill gathering a Spencer kick and galloping 50 metres himself. It was a really impressive showing from Bath. The valiance in defence and then the clinicality in attack was exactly what I can imagine Johan van Graan was looking for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that would have been so frustrating if you're an Exeter fan and you're an Exeter player, because you're right, they had all the ball they, you know, they were, I think there was a period of 4 minutes when they were within 5 meters in that first half, which is crazy. And obviously historically they've been such a good side when they get in that close and they pick and go. I think we defended the driving ball as well, G, really well, just to add to what you were saying. But yeah, I mean, the tackle stats are absolutely ridiculous from Bath. You know, tackles made, I mean, we were debating kind of some stats before we came on, but probably just shy of 240 overall in the game, which is ridiculous. I'm looking at, a breakdown of a slightly higher number here, but in the individual tackle counts, what I've got here is that Charlie Yule's made 27 tackles.
Yeah, he was
in
a monster.
The game. Quinn Rude, 24. Sam Underhill, 21. Thomas De Toit, 21. Ollie Lawrence, 20. Tom Dunn, 19. You know, Ben Urbano down in seventh place with 17 tackles. Most games that would top the list comfortably. And that's a loose head prop putting his body absolutely on the line. And that was phenomenal work rate from those boys. And yeah, I mean, they can be very, very proud of the effort that they put in. And we are certainly not soft. We are a tough team to beat. And I think that certainly showed in that first half. It was savage. It was two teams very, very hungry, very keen to get the win and very keen to represent their supporters and their club. I thought it was cracking stuff.
Yeah, we were talking at half time just the kind of pride that we had in the performance. That was night and day from some of the showings Bath put in just two years ago. There was a real scrap, a real fight about them, and they were not going to let them over their line. They were going to do everything they possibly could to defend that line. And as we said, it was just the Barbary error where Vincent scooped and scored that allowed them to get over the line. I think on 55 minutes, so just before the Fisalau first try, they'd been inside our 22 nine times and they only scored that one Vincent try. That just shows the kind of, not only the fight that we were showing, but also the way in which we were struggling to get out of our half and outside of our 22. We just couldn't because of the wind and because of a good extra play and the way that they controlled the game.
Yeah.
We just couldn't get out. The only two times we did, we were so clinical to score. It was an extremely impressive first half.
And that's where, to your point earlier, knowing how to play those conditions really helps. And Ben Spencer's a guy whose tactical kicking, I would say, is probably the best in the league at nine or definitely up there. But I thought at times he was a little bit wayward. I mean, I know it's very, very difficult, but even so, that didn't make matters easier. The one thing I was going to say is, for all the pressure and the frustration that it must have caused Exeter not scoring, the most tiring thing to do in rugby is to defend. Yeah. And so we are emptying the tank there. And Exeter, as it proved in that second half, and we were obviously disrupted massively due to the injuries that we've spoken about. But you did, I don't know, you had a bit of a sense that eventually the dam would break a little bit, and heart and effort gets you so far. But I think putting in that amount of tackles and not having the ball for that amount of time during the game, even when you've got six forwards to come off the bench, is incredibly draining. And I think the arm wrestle just was started to turn in X's favour just because of that sheer volume of defending we had to do.
Yeah, we really tired in that second half. That was so noticeable. And I think that comes back to almost the mindset of, it's a 40-minute game defensively and then it will just happen for us second half. And yeah, that wasn't the case, because Exeter in that second half, instead of kicking, which we can probably come on to, Bath maybe did a little bit too much. I'd be interested to get your thoughts. Exeter decided that they were going to run out, and that meant that they just kept the ball and we just made more and more and more tackles and they had more possession. And I think you're right. On 55 minutes, they just sort of wore us down and scored back-to-back tries. And then when we were chasing the game with players playing out of position, it just wasn't going to happen. So, yeah, I think us tiring wasn't something that we necessarily realised on the day, but on the watch back and speaking to some of the guys that watched it on the telly, like, in the first instance, they said that they thought that was a huge, huge impact. So I think you are right. Another massive defensive. We must actually just mention the Ted Hill try because
That's what I was going
to
say.
The guy to outpace the Wobosi, the Welsh winger,
Wobosi.
Yeah, Woodburn and Hodge was just remarkable from a standing start to accelerate in that way. That was really, really impressive pace from him. We were behind the posts looking away from it and he just sort of kept on going away from us. We couldn't quite believe that he had scored. So 7-12 we went in at half time. That felt huge considering what we knew about the conditions. Soon after the second half, Redpath went off injured and then we had the reshuffle and then two extra tries. Well, but Spencer kick to make it 15-7 on 46 minutes, a brilliant kick, and then two back-to-back extra tries in 10 minutes, Greg Fisalau and Ethan Roots was the last of the scoring and was what broke us really. And then when we were chasing, we just didn't have it in us, as I mentioned. We didn't use the wind well enough. You know, maybe we're talking a little bit too much about the conditions here, but I thought they were really, really vital in the mindset that we showed. We had three kicks that went over the dead ball line, which is so frustrating because that means a scrum back to where it was kicked. Whereas a few occasions in the first half, Exeter had kicks that went into the in-goal area that we touched down. And that means a goal line dropout. And in those conditions, that goal line dropout's not getting outside the 22. That was a massive swing. I just thought that was an interesting kind of difference in those two outcomes of kicks. And they make such a huge impact on the game. Yeah, I think that happened three times for Bath. We just couldn't get back into the game once Exeter had scored those two vital tries.
Yeah, and I think in general, our kicking was a little bit wayward. I think you made a good point in Hodge and Fayolle-Vosser in particular were keen to run it back in that second half. They knew that kicking it back or having kicked tennis with the wind against them just wasn't going to work for them. And I think in that situation, you've got to adapt to that and just obviously don't kick it dead, but also find seats a bit more and don't allow Exeter either to play it because you don't find touch or take quick lineouts because obviously the chasing is going to be very difficult with the heavy legs that we had. I think one other thing. I mean, on the kick chase for a start, but you know, Ollie Lawrence tackled very well, but other than that, very quiet game with ball in hand. Likewise, the guys out wide in Muir and Big Joe. I mean, kind of barely touched the ball when we had it. Did you think that there was an argument to try and kind of change our attacking tactics a little bit? It did feel like our only tactic was kick for and try and win some sort of territory and then maul. Those guys didn't get the ball at all. And I think it might have been a way just to change the dynamic of the game a little bit, just from that pure arm wrestle, which I think it became increasingly clear we were, you know, probably not going to win.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the key discussion we were having during the game. And, you know, we obviously stayed out in Exeter and discussed this game for about 5 hours afterwards. So there's plenty of conversation that we had. And this was kind of the key point. I think there's loads of interesting factors here. So I think the first thing to note is that both the Hill try and turnover from Detroit, which led to his try in the first half. So both of our tries in the game came directly from Bath kicks. So that's an interesting thing to say, that it was effective. So I was kind of saying, no, you need to be clever. You need to try and just kick. And that's your best way of winning the ball back and winning the ball back higher up. But on the other hand, it does now kind of feel like we've come away from Sandy Park. And we haven't really fired a shot. Like, we kicked the ball out of hand 26 times compared to passing it 56 times. And you're right, it just doesn't feel like we really gave it a go. And that's what is really, really frustrating.
Yeah.
But I also think, you mentioned the guys on the wing, so Will Muir and Joe Tokunasiga, they carried it a combined four times. Faye Wobosi carried it 11 times, and he was brilliant, right? He is so difficult to tackle. He got man of the match. Probably rightly so. He made such a big impact, two huge carries in tight areas just in the lead up to the two tries that they scored.
Yeah.
But a lot of what he did was coming in and around, sniping, carrying off other receivers. And I think we could have done that a little bit more. You know, there wasn't a huge number of times where he got the ball on the wing and carried. He did so much of his work in close quarters. So, yeah, I think Joe and Muir could have done that better. And I think he did have a really, really good game. You know, did we kick too much? I think in hindsight, probably. But at the time, I think tactically you could understand why they were doing it. But what now just leaves you frustrating is, you're right, we didn't really give our guys a chance to attack with ball in hand. Now, whether that was because we were missing Russell and we were playing people out of position, maybe. But yeah, we kind of let that 80 minutes go without really giving it a shot out wide, which now looking back is pretty frustrating.
And I think if to be honest, Finn stays on the pitch for the whole game, I think he probably changes things up a little bit. So I think that's, you know, he's very good at adapting his game plan to what the opposition is doing. You know, kind of cliche term, but he does play heads up rugby. Whereas I think other guys in that backline can have a tendency just to follow a plan and, you know, and stick to that. And, you know, at times we've seen this season that when we throw it about a bit and when we offload, as we've been doing so effectively, we're a really, really dangerous side. I mean, you know, look at some of the results that we've had this season. The Sale game, for example, comes to mind, when we were absolutely brilliant in out wide against a, you know, a physical team who are going to try and bring you into an arm wrestle, a bit like Exeter. So I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of it, but I guess it's easier to say that when you're not there and you're not aware of the conditions being as difficult as they were. So I'll be very interested to see how we adapt our game plan for 2 weeks' time. Mm. And the beauty of this situation, to be honest, is that, and you don't get this very often in rugby, is that we get to do it all over again with a very important, you know, ultimately a very important game for us in the context of our season now, at Sandy Park, and we get to try and put it right.
Yeah, we do get to put it right. It felt like a big opportunity lost on 40 minutes. We were feeling pretty confident and we just, we weren't able to capitalise. And I think you're right. I think key factors in that Exeter adapted far, far better to the game. I think that the injuries were obviously an important factor. And I think you're right. The absolute key factor in that second half was the boys tired hugely. And I think the sheer weight and number of tackles and effort put in that first half just told. And I think that was the key to the match. And Exeter roll on. And yeah, I'm extremely jealous of them. It was a pretty tough afternoon. They get to go to Toulouse.
Yeah.
Maybe talk a little bit in a minute about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But if you are going out there, then you can certainly agree, as you'll know, Tom, it's a good thing, because it's a wonderful away day and they'll have a fantastic time out there. And logically, perhaps it wasn't a good thing for us to win this game in terms of long-term ambitions, but logic wasn't at the forefront of our thinking at the end of that match, and we were pretty, pretty gutted. Proud of what was a brilliant first half, but gutted that we weren't able to capitalise on that from there. And so, Tom, comes to an end our 2023-2024 European dreams. The diary, the final has to come out of the diary, unfortunately. How do you kind of overall assess this campaign in Europe?
I think a really, really positive campaign. You know, definitely the best since 2015, when we were last in the quarterfinals of top tier European rugby. You know, I don't think you could have asked for a lot more, to be honest. Wins in that first period against Cardiff and Ulster, a famous win at the Rec that we were at in mid-January against Racing. That was a fantastic day. One of the really good wins in recent years. Lost to Toulouse, but as Exeter will find out next week, with the star power that they have, that is absolutely absolutely no shame at all. You know, ultimately the format has really worked against us. You know, we finished third in our pool on 15 points, equal with Harlequins, which put us down into that kind of lower tier, playing the top teams in the round of 16. If you look at two of the other pools 3 and 4, 15 points would have put us up in second place and up in that top tier. So I think we can hold our heads very high in this competition, and we can you know, going forward, see ourselves as proper contenders to be in the knockout stages of this comp.
Yeah, ultimately one second half try against Toulouse away from getting a point there, at which would have given us a home last 16 game, which I think would have made a big, big difference, but wasn't to be. And you're right, it's disappointing that we're not progressing any further. But as we look ahead a little bit now, Tom, to what's to come for Bath, perhaps ultimately it's not the worst thing in the world. So a fantastic weekend of rugby, as we discussed at the top of the show. Wins, English wins now for Exeter, for Quins, and for Northampton Saints. The Saints-Munster game was a brilliant, brilliant game of rugby. But I think in particular, Exeter and Quins have been given pretty tough tasks. I think Exeter go into the game 21-point underdogs and Quins go into the game 15-point underdogs, and against a Toulouse team and a Bordeaux team that look outstanding, to be quite frank, they're going to be, you know, really, really struggling to get anything positive from next week. And then what does that ultimately mean, Tom, do you think, for the rest of the Premiership campaign? Because straight after this weekend, we go back into a full round of Premiership action. Northampton Saints playing Leicester and Harlequins playing away against Sale, who will have had 2 weeks off. So all of their England boys will be fresh and ready to go. Exeter, of course, playing Bath. What do you think this weekend's results ultimately mean for the run-in for the Premiership, which now has to clearly become our main focus?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the teams you're talking about, they are in many ways some of our closest rivals. We're sat in second, Saints ahead of us, and then Quins and Exeter in fourth and sixth, respectively, but 2 and 5 points behind us in turn. So, you know, there's no doubt that those teams are going to put out the strongest possible sides in Europe, and so they should. So we would. We're now in a position where we've got these two blocks of two games. And that is how we will be looking at this. We finally got a bit more rest between games. It was a brutal mid part of the season prior to the Six Nations in terms of back-to-back games. So Exeter away, and then Saracens at home, then a week off, and then Newcastle away, and rounding off with Saints at home. So we're only four games, from the end of this season, which is mad. It's gone so quick. But I think that Exeter game at Sandy Park, not only because of the way that the result went, but that is a game that we will absolutely be targeting, and I think it's going to be a must-win. Right, it's going to be a brutal, you know, just in terms of pure travel, and pure time, and pure effort, and then the game itself against Toulouse. That is a brutal weekend. Meanwhile, we will be recovering. That's got to give us an extra 10-15%, I would say, on Exeter in terms of freshness. In that game, we'll get our strategy slightly better, and we get some good news on injuries in the meantime. And that is realistically what Bath fans are going to be keeping a very close eye on over the coming few days. Those things go our way, I think we're in an absolutely fantastic position. And, you know, it was that loss to Exeter a blessing in disguise if ultimately Toulouse do prove pretty unbeatable for us and for Exeter at this point in time. Possibly, I imagine that was a hard sentiment to have at Sandy Park at the weekend. But you know, full focus on the Premiership now, unlike our closest rivals. And yeah, it's top four should be, you know, as we've been saying for weeks, top four is the target, and anything less is disappointment. Now,
of course, anything less is disappointment. So much of of our preview for that extra game, which we kind of, this is going to take the form of, we're going to have a little bit of a week off like Bath and then return after the extra game, and unless something big happens. So much of this game will be determined on, you're right, how extra come through the game against Toulouse. That's on a Sunday, which again gives them only 6 days rest. Yeah. We play them on Saturday evening, 5:30 kickoff at Sandy Park. So that's going to be so tough traveling back. Probably only a couple of slow training sessions. So yeah, they'll be right up against it. Bath, on the other hand, will be just keeping a close eye on Twitter and on the Bath website for any news on the injuries. Russell, of course, being the most important one, given what that drop off would look like. So yeah, provided that news goes well, you have to have us as favourites at Sandy Park. But their record at Sandy Park, as what was being pointed out to me many times on Saturday, is so good. They rarely lose there. When they lost to Northampton Saints earlier in the season in what was a humdinger crazy game where Saints scored right at the death, that was their first loss in over a whole calendar year at Sandy Park. So they are so good down there. Not only do they know how to use the conditions, which we've, you know, covered at length in this podcast, but also just the confidence that it brings in terms of knowing that you can beat anyone at Sandy Park. Yeah. Which they have proven they can do. I think even with the advantage that we'll have based on the small amount of turnaround compared to what we will have, I think they're still going to be an extremely difficult side. And for me, the two games that we've got to win of these run-in are two home games. And I think they're going to be pivotal, Saracens and Northampton. So yeah, we'll go into it probably as slight favourites against Exeter, but I think they're going to be no pushover, and they're an extremely proud side, particularly at home.
Yeah. And with the home games we've got coming up, if we can get scrape a win at Exeter, and I think it will be a scrape, As you've said, we are in then real pole position for top four. So 44 points, Bristol and Exeter just outside the top four on 39, Leicester also on 39. So three teams on 39 outside the top four. I think if we can get 10 points from these remaining four games at a minimum, that would take us up to 15 points ahead of those teams. You know, I'd like to think that given obviously a lot of these teams will be playing each other, that would be enough to seal top four. So I think 10 points from these last four has got to be the bare minimum. You'd expect, hopefully, a 5 against Newcastle. That is going to be a nervy game. It's never easy going up there, but I mean, they haven't got to win this season, so that's got to be the target. And I think, yeah, selection-wise, it's going to be very interesting, and we've spoken about this, just how we rotate at the fringes and how we manage the situation if we're in a situation where Russell, Redpath in particular, aren't available. So, yeah, it's not getting any easier. The fingernails aren't getting any longer, that's for sure. But let's not forget that we put a great account of ourselves in Europe this season, and we're sitting second in the Premiership with four to play. And yeah, booking the 8th of June, G. Booking the 1st of June, booking the 8th of June. I've already booked my train down to London, to Bath for the semi-final. So, yeah, no pressure, boys.
Yeah, the end of our European campaign, Tom, the end of the red shirt as well, unless they roll that back for next season. A campaign that I think they can be pretty proud of, but ultimately really, really devastating given the position that we put ourselves in after 40 minutes at Sandy Park. In the wider context, perhaps it was a good thing. And now you're right, full focus on these last four, hopefully six games of the season. Can we do something special? A lot will hinge on the fitness of Russell, Redpath and Hill, of course. But fingers crossed they're fit. Fingers crossed we can turn Exeter over at Sandy Park and make something of this season.
Yeah, and you know, one of the memories that I think will really sit with me from this season and this European campaign, you know, watching the second half of that game, slightly bleary eyed after a long day, red shirt, the red hair of Miles Reed and the red on his face. It was bloody. It was brutal. We put our bodies on the line. Three reds there for Miles Reed, three reds for us in Europe. But I think, yeah, we can go away with a lot of pride, and I'm sure the Exeter fans that you spoke to, or the Exeter fans there, know that we are a a proper outfit, and will not look forward to facing us in a couple of weeks' time. If we get beaten, we are really tough to beat, and you know, ultimately that was what we set our stall out to be a couple of years ago. So I think the boys can be very proud.
Yeah, nicely put, Tom. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Great to meet a few of you on Saturday at Sandy Park as well. Do share the podcast around with your friends. We'll be back after that Exeter game in a couple of weeks. There is so much rugby to enjoy this weekend. So enjoy that. Enjoy the Masters. Enjoy the County Championship returning if you're that way inclined. What a time. And yeah, a little week off to let our fingernails grow, to relax a little bit, and then we go full steam ahead against Exeter in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you for listening, and stick behind the boys through thick and thin.